Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
One of America's eight Ivy League schools, Cornell is an extremely prestigious institution. Its ranks include 64 Nobel laureates, 33 Rhodes Scholars, 63 Olympic medalists, 10 current Fortune 500 CEOs, 35 billionaires, and most important of all, approximately 1,000 a cappella obsessed singers. In fact, if there's one thing Cornell is known for, it's not the academics or the alumni network. It's the near obsession with college a cappella. It's become so well known that it's the butt of jokes on shows like The Office.
What am I gonna do, move back to Cornell? I know it's pathetic to relive your college years, but cut me some slack. When I joined Here Comes Trouble, that's when I became a freaking rock star in college.
But one day, the Cornell community was shocked to learn that the oldest and most prestigious a cappella group on campus, the Cayugas Waiters, had been shut down and permanently banned from campus. I'm Ian Mont. This week on Campus Files, the Cayugas Waiters.
Cornell is, it looks like you think college is gonna look like when you're a kid and you close your eyes, like these gothic buildings and people on the quad playing frisbee. I mean, it's like a cartoon of what a major university is gonna look and feel like.
That's Mickey Rapkin. Nowadays, Mickey is an author and a freelance journalist. Back in the 90s, Mickey got his first experience at Cornell while visiting his brother.
My brother went there, actually. We're totally different people. He's a Division I athlete, was the captain of the tennis team, and I was like a weird freak. But he found this home there. He loved the school, and I had so much fun visiting him. It's such a beautiful place. This is going to be so corny. But you walk around and you sense hope for what the future is going to be and what you might do with your life.
Mickey arrived at Cornell in 1996 as a communications student. And the first day was a bit overwhelming.
Basically, you show up at college and a cappella is like thrust in your face from the first day, whether you want it or not. Okay, it's like there's a cappella groups singing underneath these archways where the echoing is so beautiful. And they're standing in front of the campus store, handing out flyers, recruiting for auditions. It's inescapable, unavoidable.
On one of the first nights of orientation, there was a big event in Bailey Hall, the largest auditorium on campus. It was a showcase of all the student groups you could join, a bunch of which were, of course, a cappella groups.
Listen, there's so many a cappella groups at Cornell. Like at the time, there was 18. I'm sure there's more now. There's every kind of a cappella group you could imagine. There's a cappella group for Jewish students called High Notes. There's a million a cappella groups.
But that night, sitting in Bailey Hall, there was one group that immediately stood out. The Cayugas Waiters.
And I remember the waiters immediately. They just looked like they were having more fun than anybody else. I just remember the vibe and the atmosphere. Some groups are more serious about the musicality. The waiters felt like a drinking group with a singing problem. Like it was way more about the social activity. Like if you were having fun, the audience was gonna have fun. And I just so desperately wanted to be a part of that.
The Waiters were founded in 1949, the oldest still active a cappella group on campus. The name comes from Cornell's old school song, or alma mater, about the waters of Cayuga Lake visible from Cornell's campus. The name is a play on the phrase Cayuga's Waters, and within just 4 years of their founding, the Waiters went on their first tour and recorded their first album. In the years since, they grew beyond their more buttoned-up glee club roots to become more fun, goofy, and loose. Mickey auditioned 3 times, starting his first semester freshman year.
I auditioned at the end of freshman year again. I auditioned at the beginning of sophomore year.
And each time, he was rejected.
Each time, I was like, never again. They missed out. It's their loss. But then, you know, I would inevitably see them performing somewhere on campus. And I'd be like, oh, God, they're really having fun. And I want to be a part of that. And then the middle of sophomore year, my 4th and final audition, I was like, this is it. This is the last time.
After his 4th audition, what would be his final attempt, Mickey is waiting in his dorm for some sort of news.
So 2 guys come in like, hey, we just want to let you know a lot of the guys really like you, but it's not going to work out. And we just, you know, wanted to tell you personally. Then they walk outside. And then, you know, 15 guys come rushing into the room and there's a song that they sing and they immediately take you out to go celebrate that night. You're immediately part of the family. I remember like the first night we went out, at the time, like our big bar to hang out was this bar called Ruloff's in College Town. And, you know, you just like, you go into this bar and you're like a little scared and go downstairs and there's all these guys in the corner and they're like, hey, they're so happy to see you. It's like, cheers. They're just psyched to see you. And inevitably, at a certain point, someone pulls out that pitch pipe and nobody in the basement of this bar has asked for us to perform. They're, I'm sure, not even vaguely annoyed, like openly annoyed. But then, you know, suddenly you're singing and it's just fun.
Being a waiter was a whole different experience. It was sort of like being a mini campus celebrity.
Listen, I'm dating myself a little bit, but we used to record CDs, like physical copies of CDs. And they were for sale at the campus store. And there was a record store in town for a while that would sell them. And I come home from class, I'd be walking through campus, you know, past a dorm, and you would hear our CD being played out someone's window. You know, it's like every dumb movie about music where the band hears their song on the radio for the first time and they're like, oh my God, calling each other. That's really what it was like. You know, you would go through the campus store and like freshmen would be like, oh, like they're in the Waiters. It was a thing.
Every year, the Waiters' schedule centered around an event called Spring Fever. First hosted in 1974, Spring Fever was the Waiters' annual showcase. In the movie version of this story, it would be the climax.
You go out there on stage, Bailey Hall, you know, 1,800 people, whatever it is, big lights, and you're staring out at the audience and they're cheering, like they're roaring. It's loud. You do feel like a rock star, you know? And it was like a thing for the alumni to come back every year and go to that show.
With more than 50 years of history, there were a lot of Waiters alumni to go around.
To this day, when I see alumni, people will know me as a waiter before anything else.
That's Nat Commissar. He started at Cornell in 1977. Although their time at Cornell was about 2 decades apart, the experience of being a waiter was the same.
It is an absolute blast. And rehearsals, I can just float back to rehearsal and think all of us just sitting in a room, trying our best to stay focused on the music at hand while we're laughing our heads off about whatever inane thing might have been going on. There are better a cappella groups out there. There are a lot of better a cappella groups out there. But the culture of the Waiters was pretty unusually spectacular.
And this brings us back to the annual Spring Fever show. Nat and another friend named Jonathan were watching the current group when Nat had an idea.
I said to Jonathan, I want to organize a reunion of hand-picked individuals from across multiple years, and I want to come back and perform at Spring Fever the following year. And then I went about the task of cherry-picking those individuals, and I think we ended up with 12 or 13 the first time we did it. And we went back in 1999, and we were the guest group at Spring Fever. And we blew the current students off the stage. And I'm not trying to brag. The guys in the group, Mickey Rapkin, Ryan Terry, they would all tell you the same thing.
Nat for sure is correct. The alumni group was better than the current group. They're great. And as they're leaving the stage, the crowd is cheering, "More old men, more old men, more old men." So then this alumni group, they adopted this as their name, More Old Men. And years later, they invited me to be a part of More Old Men, and I did it 10 years ago.
Mickey graduated soon after that first More Old Men performance. When he left the waiters, they were as strong as ever. But a few years later, things would begin to change behind the scenes. The group began to develop a darker side in private, all while college a cappella was experiencing a renaissance.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
All right, we're back from a brief intermission. Let's get back to Mickey.
Fast forward, I don't know, 8 years after graduation, whatever, I'm working at GQ magazine in New York. And this book agent calls me. He's like, "Oh, I really like your writing. Have you thought about writing a book? The only thing I want to write a book about is college a cappella groups." And he's like, "That's a terrible idea. What else do you got?"
Turns out that was about it.
Anyway, a couple weeks later, he calls me back and he's like, "Listen, if that's really the only thing that you want to do, let's give it a shot." So I do this book proposal and we send it out and we like miraculously get four offers for this book. It's a nonfiction book, true story. I follow three a cappella groups over the course of the 2006-2007 school year. Basically, I'm still writing the book at this point and I get a call from my book agent and he's like, "Do you want to have lunch with Elizabeth Banks?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "Someone in my office gave her the book proposal. The book's called Pitch Perfect."
Mickey took the lunch invite from Elizabeth Banks, who would soon play Effie Trinket in The Hunger Games. By the end, he was sure it was too good to be true.
I was totally wrong. They did everything they said they were going to do, and more.
Welcome to Barton University.
They may not be perfect, but they'll pitch slap the competition. Pitch Perfect.
The first Pitch Perfect movie premiered in 2012, unleashing upon the world a torrent of preteens obsessed with learning Anna Kendrick's Cup Song. But for Mickey and the waiters, it was an incredible moment.
They make this movie, and Universal's like, "Host a screening for your friends in New York." Great. I invite some people from my office, but really, I invite the waiters. And we're at the Universal screening room, and we watch the movie. I've been to set, you know, I've been involved, I've seen the movie. Like, it's not the first time I've seen the movie, but I was seeing it, you know, through their eyes. And they're just, you know, in disbelief. Like, this absurd thing that we did is now in this movie.
Pitch Perfect became a trilogy, following the fictional Barden Bellas through competition, celebrity, downfall, and successful return. It was no short of a cultural phenomenon that launched a cappella to a new level. And while neither the book or the movie are directly about the waiters, both exist because of them. The movie series kicked off a college a cappella boom. And all that time, Nat, the organizer of More Old Men you heard from earlier, is still involved with the group. From the outside, the waiters are still a group of goofy young men singing songs. But beneath the surface, completely out of view of outsiders, including alumni like Nat, a dangerous side to the waiters had emerged. That dangerous side, however, would come out into the open when Nat chats with the mom of a current waiter.
So I'm talking to the mother of one of the current group members, and she and I had attended school together, so we had a basis of friendship and conversation, and she said something along the lines of, you really need to get involved with the group and see if you can do something about this hazing because it's horrible.
According to the mom of a current waiter, her son had been severely hazed while joining the group.
And then she described what was going on, and I talked to her son, and then the same day, talked to the guy who was the leader of the group and said, is this what's going on? What's going to happen? And the guy said, yeah, it's tradition. You know, we've always done it. And this kid's telling us this is the way the waiters have always been. And we said, no, it's not. And it has to stop now or something bad's going to happen. He said, oh, he kind of gave us the, you know, you old farts.
The waiters and college a cappella in general are booming in popularity. But in the background, a pattern of brutal hazing appears to have taken root. Nat and a few other alumni kept pushing the group to shut it down before someone got hurt.
But a few months later, the charges were brought.
Just months after Nat learned of the hazing, Cornell brought charges against the group, and with them, a whole array of possible penalties. The group would be given one final chance to state their case in 3 days of hearings before a disciplinary committee. If they failed, the group could be banned forever.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples, breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
Only a few short months ago, Nat Commissar learned his college a cappella group, the Cayuga's Waiters, had begun hazing new members. And now, Cornell was aware and ready to punish the group.
I sent an email out to a group of maybe 10 or 12 core members of the group across the years who had always been involved. We formed this, not a board, because we weren't official in any way, shape, or form, but a group of alumni who were going to deal with this issue.
Cornell scheduled 3 days of in-person hearings to investigate the case. Nat attended as the alumni representative and remembers hearing the students describe the hazing they were subjected to.
I don't want to drag them through that mud again. That was painful enough to share in that room. Suffice it to say, it was just heinous and stupid, making people do things that they just shouldn't do and manipulating them emotionally in such a way that they felt they were forced to do it. It was really horrid.
The exact details are confidential, But Cornell would later publish a summary of the case, stating that some members were required to sit naked in an ice bath in a bathroom during an organization trip. Some were required to apply Icy Hot to their genitals. The summary also acknowledged that more dangerous hazing practices were present, but not specifically described.
So while you're in those 3 days of hearings and you're learning the details of what's happening, was there ever a moment where you thought, okay, maybe this group isn't recoverable?
No, I never had that thought. Matter of fact, I had the antithesis in that these young freshmen and sophomores were standing up and saying, this is stupid. This is not something I will accept. I think it's important to note that there is so much bravery and so much integrity in those young men who stood up to say no to this. I mean, it really kind of gets whitewashed in all of the horrible behavior that was there. But I really admire those kids that said, no, we will not do that anymore.
The hazing Nat heard about during the hearing was disturbing, but there was an even more shocking connection between the waiters and a fraternity that had been kicked off campus 5 years earlier.
So I knew that there were SAE members over the years. Heck, one of the guys that I sang with, Roger Hurd, back in the 70s and 80s, was an SAE. So there's always been fraternity members in the waiters over the years. At the hearing, there was reference from several of the kids who testified that SAE members had brought this to the group when George Dadoon died, that when they were disbanded, that they found an outlet.
If you're a longtime listener of Campus Files, the name George Dadoon may sound familiar. Earlier this season, we covered how George was subjected to brutal hazing at the hands of his SAE brothers, ultimately leading to his death in 2011. Following George's death, SAE was barred from campus for 5 years and kicked out of their fraternity house. Apparently, a number of SAE brothers from that time were also new members of the Cayuga's waiters.
Coincidentally, at the same time, several of the waiters had decided to rent a house together in College Town, but it became the waiters' hangout, almost the waiters' fraternity house.
It was at this rented house that much of the hazing took place. By the end of the hearings, a partial picture had come together. It appeared that a group of former SAE brothers may have introduced some of the hazing practices, which led to George Dadoon's death, to the Cayuga's waiters following SAE's temporary suspension. All of this complicated the case.
So there was much discussion about what the penalty would look like because the rules didn't really encompass non-fraternal organizations.
At the end of the hearings, the waiters received a temporary suspension and an extended probationary period.
And then there'd have to be a faculty person who was going to be an advisor, and the alumni would have to create a board and oversee the group, which everybody felt dandy about. I mean, it was 3 days of testimony. It was a lot of emotion, a lot of tears. I mean, not just the kids crying, but the people on this panel were shedding tears.
Mickey was close to the group, but he was working on a second book and was busy with his day job. So the ruling was a surprise for him.
In like 2016, this story breaks. Cornell a cappella group suspended for hazing. And I was like, what? And this report kind of made it sound like it had been systemic, that it had been going on for decades, that it was a fundamental part of this group's history. And it was devastating. I first felt bad for the kids, but I was also frustrated for the group, that people would think this was a part of our history, that this thing that I had loved so much was somehow built on this like rotten core.
But the temporary suspension wouldn't stand for long. Earlier, you heard Nat say that the rules around hazing didn't really account for non-fraternal organizations. According to Nat, the lead prosecutor on the case wasn't satisfied with the temporary suspension.
The prosecutor went to another part of the administration, I don't know to whom, and said the rules were not applied. There is no rule that says a non-fraternal group can get off this lightly. And she presented it without any testimony, without any defense, to another group of individuals who looked at it for 45 minutes and said, the evidence is clear. They deserve a permanent ban. That was it.
On April 25th, 2017, Cornell announced that the Cayuga's waiters would be permanently disbanded. Mickey, outside of being a waiter, was also a member of a fraternity in undergrad. He wasn't in SAE specifically, but he does remember being hazed by his frat.
I was in a fraternity. We got hazed in my fraternity. Hazing is disgusting. These kids are vulnerable. They've come away from home for the first time. They're new to this place. And you're putting them in danger, making them feel shitty about themselves. It's disgusting. I think this is one of the scariest parts of college campuses, is that these ideas take root so firmly and you so badly want to be a part of this thing that you'll sort of do anything people ask you to do. But it was so not a part of the waiters at the time when I was there, and not for many years after. That wasn't what the group was about. It was built on camaraderie and love.
But hearing how quickly the waiters' culture had changed from one of camaraderie and love to a culture of hazing in just a few short years is hard to reckon with. To this day, he feels conflicted about this ruling.
There's absolutely a part of me that thinks there should be a zero tolerance policy for hazing. But I do feel in this instance, they made a really arbitrary decision to disband this group that means a lot to a lot of people, and not just to people in the group, to a lot of students who went to Cornell, a lot of alumni. And there were so many other ways to teach the lesson than to just disband the a cappella group.
Mickey remembers hearing the news about George Dadoon's death at the hands of George's SAE brothers and how SAE received a temporary suspension. In 2020, shortly after the waiters were banned, SAE applied to return to campus and was given permission to begin recruiting again in 2022.
It's so heartbreaking. And that fraternity was disbanded for a time and is back. And I remember looking into that incident, and that fraternity had like a website up, and it was basically like heralding the return. It was like coming soon. Like it was like they were advertising like a pop-up restaurant. And I was like, this is so gross. A kid died. Listen, a kid shouldn't have to die for you to change the rules, obviously. But it just felt just like, what are we doing here?
In the years since, the waiters have attempted to return on multiple occasions, each time encountering roadblocks. By this point, more than 8 years have passed.
Every couple of years, there's an email chain, a WhatsApp group. We got to get the group back. How do we do this? But in some ways, the damage is done. Colleges have no institutional memory because every 4 years, there's a whole new turnover of students. So you're starting from scratch.
Which begs the question, campus groups like the Cayuga's Waiters or even SAE have a culture that makes them unique. With that continuous connection broken, would a new group of waiters actually be true waiters?
What makes a waiter a waiter?
It's so funny, like at auditions, you would sit around after and you'd be like, okay, this guy technically is a good singer, but is he a waiter? Like, is he going to be fun to hang out with? You know, you're looking for the personality probably more than you're looking for the musicality, sometimes probably to our own detriment. But what makes a waiter? A big heart, a lover of life, someone who wants to have fun.
When I wrapped up my calls with Mickey and Nat, that's where things stood. There were no active plans to revive the waiters, but there was a very active group of alumni with complicated feelings about the fate of the group that meant so much to them. While I was writing this episode, Mickey contacted me saying there was something important he wanted to talk about.
I felt like when we were talking the other day, there was sort of this elephant in the room for me, and I wasn't sure that if I wanted to get into it or not, and it just felt like...
Mickey called because he'd been thinking about his own experience with hazing, not in the waiters, but in the fraternity he belonged to. Hazing and the culture it comes from, for Mickey, cultivate unhealthy relationships between men.
You know, the same culture that tells you the way to bond is by, you know, making your quote unquote brothers vomit. That's the way to become a family.
Mickey is thinking a lot about this right now because his actual biological brother is sick. The two of them are very close, but still, they were socialized in a way that makes it very hard to express real feelings for each other.
For the last 18 months, my brother has been battling brain cancer.
It's awful. He can barely see, he can barely hear. He's in a wheelchair. Thankfully, he's mentally amazing, sharp as he's ever been, making jokes, everything. When we talked the other day, I was in the basement at my brother's house where I've sort of been sleeping because he's in the guest room, which is on the ground floor. I'm so lucky that I can be there. And I know that my brother knows that I love him because I'm there so much, you know? But it's like this culture of hazing keeps you from kind of being able to say, I love you. And it's like that culture that we came up with is the same one that's keeping me from hugging my brother and telling him how much he means to me and how much I appreciate him.
Have you tried talking to him about some of this?
No. You know, he falls asleep at night and I try to sit there, you know, in the chair next to him as long as I can in case he, you know, wakes up and needs anything. I just want him to know that I'm there. And he knows, obviously, that I love him. And we've had conversations, you know, where I've been able to thank him for things that he's done over the years and being so supportive and all that. But I still, when I leave, we do like a pat-pat hug, you know, like guys do. It's just, in thinking back on it, it's all sort of one story.
For Mickey, the emotional barrier he feels between him and his brother is directly connected to the death of the waiters. As he puts it, it's all one story. And I think he's spot on. I'd argue that the waiters are a brotherhood, in a lot of ways just like a fraternity. And when the waiters started hazing, joining the group became about survival. You earn your place as a brother by being a man, proving yourself, not cracking. The measure of success is how well you can hide your misery and discomfort, how emotionally detached you can be. There's a reason hazing is rare in sororities. It's a product of what we see as essential to being a man. So when a group begins to haze, they're really measuring how good you are at performing this particular version of manhood. At one point for Mickey, the waiters were an antidote to this kind of hyper-masculine way of relating to other men. For more than 60 years, the brotherhood of the waiters was instead about family, camaraderie, and most of all, love. What the waiters presented to Mickey, Nat, and hundreds of others was a different way of being a man. A way that showed love and affection openly. A path towards a brotherhood with no price of admission. I think in some way, Mickey's brother could see the way that different path has enriched Mickey's life. After all, he'd been there by Mickey's side, cheering him on at every opportunity.
Despite all of this stuff going on in his life, he's sitting there and he's like, you got to get the waiters back together. You got to put on a concert at Carnegie Hall. And you use this show at Carnegie Hall as a launching pad to announce, you know, you're bringing the waiters back to campus. There's something about my brother's illness that it's like so unjust that this athlete, this god that I looked up to my whole life is in this position and I can't fix that. And like maybe I can right this other wrong with the waiters.
Mickey's older brother, John Rapkin, passed away on Friday, August 29th. John was 51 years old. It's possible and maybe even probable that it's too late to bring the waiters back to campus. But in spite of that, both Mickey and Nat hope that the waiters can still be what they once were. Only time will tell.
Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Ian Mont. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.